Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste, and those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say, it's nation time. You don't say that no more. Because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. Tonight, we are continuing our theme of farming and making our own communities, and we have one of our premier interviewers and schedulers on, Sister Andrea Muhammad, and I see she's here. I'm going to open her mic. Assalamualaikum.
Walaikum salam. How are you, sir?
I am well by the grace of Allah. How about yourself?
Oh, I am doing wonderful, and I'm praying that my reception is well. I didn't make it home. I'm still on the highway, but I'm ready to go.
Okay, I hear you just fine. And I see Sister Tasha there. Sister Tasha, if you could push the 1 on your keypad, and we'll get you into the queue, and we'll open your mic. There she is.
Wonderful, wonderful. Sister Tasha, are you there?
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am. How are you? Yes, ma'am, we hear you.
I'm fine. Praises be to Allah.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I am so excited to have you on this evening. And I was blessed to spend a few minutes with Sister Tasha. It's such an inspiration to always, whatever time I get to spend with her. But I miss learning about this irrigation system, and you know, I'll have her to talk about that later. Just putting an irrigation system in today. But Sister Tasha, please, for the audience that may not know you or may not know everything that you are doing, please tell us a little bit about yourself, beloved.
Yes, ma'am. First of all, I want to say assalamu alaikum. I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. A few of the things, the last time I was on the show, I talked about a lot of the organizing I was doing around black farmers in the St. Louis region, in both the urban and the rural area. So that work is, I'm still doing that work. I'm also working with the Moss on two vacant lots to grow food on for the community. Since the last time I was at the show, I was with an environmental organization. And since that time, I was able to talk to my funders about me starting my own, them funding me to start my own organization, which ultimately happened. And so now I'm the director of a food justice organization here. And our main goals is to for black people to be back in control of the food system. You know, as the messenger teaches us, farming is the engine of our national life. And so when I really sit and think about that, what does it mean that farming is the engine of our national life? You know, and understanding when the minister said on the time to leave that there was, farming was the first profession. And knowing that there's so many different professions that come from farming, you know, I wanted to start this organization to be able to really take these things and create an economic base for the community in St. Louis, North St. Louis, and show them that all we have to do is just work, pull our resources. We got the tools that we need here. And so when I was at the organization, what I started on was working with a community here. It's called the Fairground Neighborhood. And it was the head of the neighborhood association, Miss Lily. I had met her a few years back before. She wanted me to grow food for the neighborhood. I just didn't have the capacity. So when I got in the position of a food justice organizer, I circled back to that. And we started working on, you know, how to bring food to the community. And so one of the things that she was saying was how they begged the grocery store to come back. And the grocery store said some, you know, problematic things. My first thought was, you know, and the problematic things it was around the community stealing and things like that. My first thought was, you know, how dare they done stole us. But I ultimately told Ms. Lily, well, what would it look like if the community owned their own grocery store? We have a nonprofit cooperative in St. Louis. It's in an area that's been gentrified. But I took her over to show her their store, and from there, work with her to see what, you know, been working with her to see what would it look like to really essentially do that in North City. And that is one of the biggest projects that I'm working on right now in St. Louis, outside of the growing. Is, you know, just working with the Fairground Neighborhood to have a community-owned grocery store. And, of course, setting
yes,
up my
ma'am. Organization. Yes, ma'am. Oh, praise be to Allah. Oh, that's a lot, sister. What stage of the grocery store, where are you all in that development? That is beautiful because we definitely need to control our food, and grocery stores are something that many areas don't have, or if we have them, it is not the best food. So where are you with that development?
Yes, ma'am. So we're at the beginning stages. What I do is because I'm an organizer, I like to organize the community and really center the community's voices and let them take the lead. And asking them what is it that they need. So I didn't have to come back and ask them what is it that they needed, what they wanted to see, because I already know that they want a grocery store because they've been begging for one. The only grocery store that was there, of course, was taken out. And so I didn't need to do that step. The step that we're doing is trying to purchase the land that a vacant lot and then trying to get the money to build the grocery store. It won't be a humongous grocery store, but it'll be a store that will essentially meet the needs of community. So like now, we applied for the Healthy Food Financing Grant, which is a USDA grant. We didn't get the grant. I was upset. We didn't get the grant, but it didn't stop us. In my time in doing this work that I've been doing, I know the last time I talked about going to California, some of the people that I'm connected to in California is helping us and are going to grant us the money when we're ready to buy the land and help us raising the funds to get the building built. So right now we really in the fundraising stage. It's two parts to that. We're in a fundraising stage, but we also in reaching out to community members for them to take part in this grocery store, for them to ultimately design their own grocery store. And this is something that's going to be theirs. And it's a mixed model. I won't say that it's a cooperative all the way. It's a mixed model because the neighborhood that I'm working with isn't really big. And a lot of the residents have left, and the alderman is gentrifying the neighborhood and tearing down houses and things like that. So it's residents there, and it's not like 5,000 residents in that neighborhood. So essentially what we're doing with the model of the grocery store is community ownership. So creating it in a way that the community members that are long-term renters and homeowners, where they own equity in this grocery store. And so, you know, it was when I came up with that idea, it was my way of combating gentrification. If you want to push us out, pay us, because we own the land and we own the grocery store. And so, you know, we have to do the fundraising, but we also have to get the buy-in from the whole community. And get them to understand that this is your grocery store. This isn't me coming in telling you what you need, but essentially us working together and really them taking the lead and me just, you know, getting the resources to make sure that it happens.
That's beautiful. That's huge. And what is the response and how are you going about reaching out to the community?
So it's a sister here, Sister Fatima Muhammad, and she's doing a farmer's market. So the neighborhood that she's doing the farmer's market in is adjacent to Fairground. And so one of the things that I'm doing is getting all the farmers there to be able to set up tables, to be able to get marketing materials and things like that. And I plan on doing some passing out of flyers and talking to engaging community members during that time that she opens up the farmers market in May. That's really essentially how I plan on really engaging the community and trying to get a sense of the residents that's in the, and really good old-fashioned door knocking and, you know, going door to door with the neighborhood association.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Oh, that's beautiful. So, if I understand you, you're doing multiple different things. You're having the black farmers come in, doing the farmers market, petitioning or going door to door, and then you have a sister who is helping you and other ways in contacting the residents. I think that's huge. One thing, if I understood you, that you also talked about forming a type of cooperative as organizing towards grocery stores. Did I understand correctly?
What was that last part? I heard you say about forming cooperative, but the last part?
Sorry, I had the speaker on and I had stuff to my ear. You said you didn't understand me?
Yeah, I didn't hear that last part you said.
Oh, I was asking
I was asking, did I understand you to say that one of the things that you all were farming was similar to like a cooperative in order as you're growing toward starting the grocery store? Did I understand that correctly?
Well, not really. So, like, the model, I didn't want to do a traditional cooperative.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, looking at, like, between St. Louis and East St. Louis has witnessed a lot of corruption.
Yes.
And I wanted, so cooperatives are great, but when you think of it, it's still, like, a small, it can still be a small group over the many. And I didn't want it to be that. I wanted this to be an inclusive thing for community members and residents, because Ms. Lilly is also, so the main goal of the Neighborhood Association is they work on housing. It just so happened that they need a grocery store. And so in them working on housing, you know, and me trying to help them get the grocery store in, we hoping that the grocery store will attract more residents to move back over there into that community. And so not necessarily a cooperative in the traditional sense that you think of, but this, it's hard to explain because I can't, so there's many different types of cooperatives. You got worker cooperatives, you got owner cooperatives, you got consumer cooperatives. And it would be kind of like, it's for the sake of understanding, I'm going to say it's a cooperative, but it really is community collective ownership, you know, and so like the idea is for the community to collectively own like stakes, like so say for instance 5% they own 5% ownership of the store or 1% ownership of the store, and so the reason why essentially I want to do it like that was because we also know that you know, you have people that in the community who can't see the longevity of things, and they may want to sell a share, their share. And so I wanted to make it not, I don't want to say difficult, but I wanted to do it in a way that it couldn't just be sold off easily because some white developers wanted to come in and you know, they're ready to take over the hood. I wanted, you know, and so they send somebody in that works for them to be a resident and get a share of it, and then they buy multiple shares, and then they can sell it off. So I made it in a way that, so we'll make it in a way that it'll be the homeowners and long-term renters will own shares, but it's going to be a lot of stipulations on it. And that on that side, we have a cooperative lawyer that's here that's familiar with this. So she would be able to go more in depth into, like, the legal side of it. But it's essentially community ownership more so than it is a cooperative.
I love that concept. That is beautiful. I truly love that concept, yes. To safeguard the community, to safeguard the grocery store, and essentially helping to make the community there in Fairgrounds a better and safer place to live because the residents are having ownership of that business. That is beautiful. That is huge. I commend you, Sister Tasha, on what you all are doing. And all the work that you're doing. Excellent. So you were also talking about having the black farmers to come in. And I know in the past you mentioned the young urban farmers. Are they involved? Are you still in contact with the young urban farmers? And are they involved in this process?
So yes, ma'am. So the last time I was here, I did a lot of work so I do food justice, which that's a national movement on food justice that's in the United States for black and brown people, right? And in that, You have farmers, you have people who just fight, you have culinary arts, people do all walks of the food system work, like from production to distribution, from farmer to processor, fighting for food justice. And so one of the things about St. Louis is that they don't think that food justice is a social justice issue here. I always say that if you can't feed your army, it's not your army, it's your enemy's army. So one of the biggest things that, like, you see here is, like, the repeat of cycles here. Like, people are doing the same thing, and the hopelessness that's here. So when I was doing this work, and I remember telling, like, it was a deliberate effort to keep rural black farmers away from us. And it was, and it still is. But I'm relentless, and I you know, that's why Muhammad is God. And so in knowing that reality, that that's why Muhammad is God, and you know, this is what we're taught we're supposed to be doing and having for our community, I didn't stop until I got the support I needed. I traveled to both California and New York. Doing this work has taught me patience like I've never known. I think I had to wait a year for someone to come off a sabbatical just to have a conversation. It was a beautiful conversation. I had to do all of that to get the support for the work of food justice and the support of the work of being able to help black growers here. We know from, you know, rural farmers have a discrimination by the USDA. Urban farmers have it as well. It hasn't had that long history that the rural farmers have had. And so on top of urban farmers having that, they also have the issue in urban areas. Like our LRA is trying to clamp down on us buying land to grow food on. Now, South City, anybody familiar with St. Louis, they know about the Delmar Divide. Anywhere south of Delmar, the economics is higher. They get to back gardens and grow food on without pause. But in North City, we get told to do garden leases and things like that. So in doing this work, I had to be patient. I had to listen to what were the needs of all of my urban farmers. And so I looked at each one, and I worked on their behalf. But one of the biggest things that I knew in order to grow this work and keep it consistent was that I had to connect outside of St. Louis to some national groups. And one of the biggest groups that I knew that I needed to connect with was the National Black Food and Justice Alliance. And so I did that. My organization is now a member organization of that. And they focus on food justice, focus on supporting black farmers. They focus on getting resources, meaning financial resources, in the hands of our community that needs it the most and stuff like that. So I say all of that to say that I am still working with urban farmers, but the process is so daunting. It's so rigid. Like, everything for me has to be precise because there's a lot of steps in this that I have to help them get to make it, to be successful, to have a successful growing season. One of the things that I did last year, I was able to launch a mini grant and able to raise about $5,000 to grant out mini grants to black farmers throughout St. Louis and East St. Louis. And I saw how that impacted them and helped them prepare for this year. It wasn't even to prepare for last year. It helped them prepare for this year. So, you know, we still working out some things as far as it it goes to like helping them sustain themselves, making sure they expand their growing operations and that they have enough food to feed themselves, their families, and community. And also, I have some great news. I've been able to connect with some rural farmers in Missouri, and I've been able to talk to them, and we're talking about doing a training program that it can be a cross-training, rural farmers teaching urban farmers some things, and urban farmers teaching rural farmers some things, and ultimately really to focus on getting more youth into farming and not to send them into institutions, because I really believe that, like, places like Soul Fire Farm is literally shifting that whole concept that you got to go to school for 4 years and pay $60,000 a year to learn agriculture, you know, and go in debt to learn agriculture to not always come out as a farmer. And so a lot of things that I'm seeing, people that farm have never been to school for farming. Someone taught them, and they've done it like that. And so right now what I'm doing is working. I'm looking at grants to work with farmers to get them the marketing that they need to help them for this farmer's market that we're putting together. So a lot of them are ready to farm. They're ready to have our first year at the only farmer's market that North City really has had. And so on my end, I have to get them prepared, such as having marketing banners, making sure that they have tables and things like that, and someone is giving us a grant to help them meet those needs.
Yes, ma'am. So when will that be? You're talking about preparing them. When is this? You said in May?
May 8th, yes.
Say it one more time. I'm sorry.
May 8th.
Okay, May 8th. And where will you be doing that?
That will be at outside of Be Well Cafe in Hyde Park neighborhood. So, like I was saying earlier, the sister Fatima, she's creating a co-working space.
Okay.
You know, and her business is called The Apiary. And so she's creating a co-working space. And in creating a co-working space, she's wants to do a farmer's market outside. We talked. She came on to talk to the Black farmers at our monthly meeting and just to gauge and see who wants to do the farmer's market. So some of the farmers will be doing farmer's markets. But other farmers are working with me and Ms. Lily to do farmer boxes for the elderly, to provide those boxes for the elderly.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes. So you're doing, it's like multi, is that not just twofold, but multi levels to this. And that's beautiful because you are definitely including the care of the elders, the seniors in that, and that is so needed. Just on a small level, working as a nurse doing home care years ago, one of the things that I saw is many times the elders were spending so much on medications that they neglected getting the proper food. So that is huge, Ms. Tatasha. That I really commend you on that also. I really do.
Yes, ma'am. I wanted to add also that, like, I'm also working, and I have to have these conversations, but this is part of what I wanted to do. So I was working with this chef COVID happened, so COVID interrupted a lot of things. But the year before last, I was working with a chef who does just raw vegetables and things like that. And when I was working with him, we were in a area that was heavily drug populated and substance abuse. There's a lot of substance abuse users. And he set up a stand. They had a neighborhood festival. He set up a stand and he made these veggie wraps he made some fresh juice and like these twisted crackers with vanilla bean hummus and strawberries and chia seeds. He did it all fancy. And the community was lined up to get his food. They're good. And so, like, one of the things that I told them was, you're breaking the narrative that our people don't want to eat healthy. Because you're lying. I always say we just like flavor in our food. Because, you know, a lot of times they're healthy even when it's introduced to us on the other side. It's always from some white people that come in the hood that is like, oh, yeah, I'm going to introduce all of these different foods to you. No flavor, bland. And our people are like, I'm good. Essentially, he's taking the healthy, making it ours, making it, bringing it back to us. And so one of the things I want to do is work with him with both the farmer's market and these produce boxes. And then there's another farmer who does pizzas. And he's been wanting to do pizzas with all natural ingredients and stuff. So I'm looking to work with both of them in this, in as we're expanding things out.
Oh, sister, that is beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. Brother Carlson, do we have anyone with questions?
Not at this time, brothers and sisters. If you are listening to the show and you find this interesting and you have a question and you'd like to contribute to the show by making a comment, please press the 1 on your keypad and I will open your mic and you can participate in the conversation. Once again, any questions or comments, please press the 1 and join the conversation.
And Natasha, would you share
your
email?
We got a caller.
Yes.
Dr. Ridgely.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum salam.
Okay, you know, you said something that struck my attention about you don't have to go to college to learn agriculture or how to farm. Well, that's exactly the way it was done throughout the history of the planet Earth. In other words, your parents, you would learn from your parents. Okay, you would start off living on the farm. Because the 95% of the people on the planet Earth, until the last 100 years, lived on a farm or small villages. So farming was a part of life. Now, what the white man has done is commercialized on it, and he took the children of the farmers and sent them to college to get degrees, and then give them a job someplace other than the farm. Because the schools don't teach farming. They used to, back in the day of George Washington Carver, they used to teach the farmers how to farm. Well, the colleges do not teach the people how to farm. They just teach you how to get a job working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture or with Monsanto or some other big corporation, chemical company, that's selling the chemicals and equipment to the farmers. And now we're in a process where they're taking all of our children away from the farmers, the black farmers, and now we're trying to reestablish a farming system and a farming community. It's going to have to be done as a community, and the black farmers were taken out of business when integration took their markets. So now we don't have the black schools. We don't have the black hospitals. We hardly have any black communities where people are cooking anymore. So the market was taken away from the black farmers. So this is why we're pushing value added, because most of the people ain't cooking, but they'll eat some food that's already cooked for them. So that's why we're pushing value added so the farmers can make some money. But again, the key is, farming was an institution. It was an industry. It was a community affair. It was a family affair. You passed it on from generation to generation. The enemy, the white man, he broke that chain, all right, on purpose. And so now we're trying to figure out how to get back in business. And what Sister Tasha is doing is very instrumental and important in that. And indeed, you don't need to go to college to farm. What I learned about farming, I did not learn in college. What I learned about farming, I did not learn in college. The only thing I learned in college was my dissertation when I went around and talked to the best farmers in Michigan, because I went to Michigan State, and found out how they made decisions, how they went about managing their farms. Now, that was the only thing of value that I learned from going to get my PhD. It was my dissertation that I went out and actually talked to real live farmers to find out how they did it and how they thought and what was the most important things for them to manage the operation. But otherwise, it was zilch at Michigan State, A&T, zilch about farming. So that's all I wanted to say. Don't waste your money and your time going to college telling you're going to learn how to farm. You go, all they're going to do is train you how to get a job somewhere where you can sell products to the farm. That's what I'm going to
like. Absolutely. And that was absolutely spot on. And right now, we've done what we've always done. Pulled ourselves up from our bootstraps and got to work. And so now, you know, you see training programs. There's a training program in Ohio teaching you how to farm. Will Allen had a training program. So Far Farm is one of the biggest programs on the Northeast that is, like, training so many people. And you think about how much you spend to go to college versus, like, $1,500 to go through a So Far Farm, $1,500 to $2,000 to go through a So Far Farm program. And not only do you go through their program, but next year you come back for free to learn how to run the business. And so it's so essential for organizations like them to exist and for us to be doing things like that. But one of the things that I know it's so exciting with people, they want to grow food, but the food system is so vast. And I always tell people who want to get into growing food to use your creativity and think beyond just growing food, because, one, it seems great on social media, but it is a lot of work. It is a lot of work. And typically when people tap out and are ready to give up on farming is when the sun comes out and there's a lot of weeds. But it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of work that you will probably be doing alone. So I always tell people to be creative in what you're doing. Right now, I got a new farmer that I just started working with. I'm so impressed by this young lady. She's in East St. Louis. When I say amazing what she's doing, she grows food, but that's not what she's known for. She's growing indigo, the flower indigo, to use it as a natural dye. And I've been, so like locally I've been dealing with like people trying to like steal my work and make it as their own. And so like I kind of sat back, and when she asked for help, I kind of sat back to see what people were going to do, if they were going to help her or not. No one helped her, so I reached out to her, got her connected to someone who had some land. And then after that, a few months later, she reached out again on social media to ask for help. And I just waited to see anyone was going to help her. No one did. And so I reached out again. I said, well, let me help you, really promote yourself. And then I just started working with her. And I ended up giving her a mini grant to help her get started. But I was so impressed with what she was doing as far as, like, growing indigo and using that to make natural dyes for colors. She's also an artist, so to make colors instead of some of the carcinogenic, cancer-causing chemicals that we have in these dyes that's on the clothes. she's using some natural. So when you're thinking about farming, thinking about thinking outside the box, we need processing plants to be able to process some of this stuff. You know, and not real big process. I was listening to the minister. I can't think of the lecture I was listening to. But he was talking about that on the lecture, about all the different avenues to make, you know, our own in the food system. It doesn't have to just be growing food. You know, it's so many different avenues to take with growing food and you know, going back to farming being the engine of our national life. What does that really mean? What comes from the land that, you know, helps us, you know, build a nation? There's a lot of things that comes from farming, animal husbandry, that's going to help us build a nation of our own.
Oh, praises are due to Allah. Yes, ma'am. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you just, you generate so many ideas, so many questions. You're doing so many things. That is phenomenal. Brother Carlton, do we have any other callers?
Not at this time.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you. So, Sister Tashi, you were talking about the sister that you are working with, and you mentioned a website or your organization. Please share how listeners can contact you and your organization.
Yeah. So I'm actually working on our website now. I haven't published a website yet, but I'm working on putting it together. I got to add some more pictures and stuff. But my email address is elevating, ELEVATING, voices, VOICES, STL, @gmail.com. And I can't, sorry, I'm going to say that again, elevating, voices, STL, @gmail.com. And I want to say that, you know, all this work I'm doing, I can't say like as if I'm doing it alone. My co-director, who's my partner in community, does a phenomenal job on the advocacy side around understanding the political process around food, your food system and your built environment. And so we say built environment is an environmental term that we use to talk about the environment that's built around you. And so she focuses on the built environment. And one of the things that she's spearheading is dealing with corner stores. So there's a program in Chicago called Imam, Inner City Muslim Action Network. When I first saw this program, I was like, this is amazing. Because what they do is work with Arab corner store owners who are Muslim about the tumultuous relationship with, or the tension-filled relationship that the black community and these Arab corner store owners face. And he works with the ones who are willing and want to have a better relationship and understanding of our community and really want to change how they show up in our community. And so when I saw it, I was like, we got to bring this here. So my co-director, Kelly McGowan, she is working on doing a food audit to gain information on how many, the liquor store densities in our community, the corner store densities, what's being sold in these stores by SNAP benefits, and then the ones that are willing to work on it on my end, I go in and talk to them about, first of all, Islam. We Muslim, and what is our duty as Muslims, you know, and you've been in the community. And these are stores who want to have better relationships with the community. And so working with them on creating an alternative business model than the current one ones they have. But that's long-term work, and we are working on it constantly. But the ultimate goal is to write a local policy around nuisance business, which is something that came out of Philadelphia. they wrote with the problems with corner stores, they wrote a law around nuisance businesses, and they're shutting down these corner stores who are the most problematic in our neighborhoods, and that it's just business as usual for them.
I'm sorry, did you say like useless businesses? I couldn't understand
the like when, you know, like our general orders allow no one to cause a nuisance on our post.
Nuisance
business.
Okay, yes, got you. Okay, yes, ma'am. All praises to do to Allah. Yes, ma'am. Wow, that is huge, because we have multiple liquor stores. We have, well, wonderful that you are reaching out to deal with some of that, and to see if there are people in those capacities that are interested and willing in changing that relationship.
Absolutely.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, absolutely, yes, ma'am. We did a pilot program where we launched it, and we did it with one of the universities here. And as we were doing it, it was very, it kind of shocked me. Because when we went to one of the stores, the owner, he was like, hey, you know, he asked her what we was doing, and I told him, and he said, yeah, I like that. He said, I really want to have a better relationship with the community. And he said, yeah, I got to bear with me with this one. He said, I used to buy stuff for Christmas and give it to the aldermen of the community and make pass out to the community. He said, but I'm not doing it anymore. I just want to pass out myself. That automatically thought about the corruption involved in that with that whole scenario. But just him even saying that and vowing to have a better relationship. So there are some stores who do want to have a better relationship, who have been vocal about having a better relationship with community members and things like that. Now, I would love to see us own and control our whole communities, but the reality is that while North City is probably ready, because they have hit rock bottom in North City, North County, they're not ready yet. You know, they still want Trader Joe's. And bringing the idea of community ownership is like, you know, when you lose it all, your perspectives are different versus when you're still living in luxury.
Yes, ma'am. That's
I should say what's perceived to be luxury. Sorry.
Right. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That's a very important and essential point, because America is falling, and some of us really are deceived and we don't see it. So, yes, ma'am, that's a huge, huge point. Absolutely. So that's beautiful, all the work that you're doing. And I just wanted to spend a few minutes just asking, because as you're building the infrastructure for the community gardens and working with the neighborhood, as I left you this morning or this afternoon, you were actively getting ready to start an irrigation system. Is that something you teach? Do you do online, like Zoom classes? Or how does someone learn about that? And as we're doing, using lots to have gardens and so on, so we can have a water source.
The bag back up is that I took a permaculture class a few months ago. I'm going back to it, but one of my teachers in that permaculture class transitioned. May Allah be pleased with her. But it was a sister. And a Hispanic brother. And it's something about learning from your own agriculture, learning these different systems that are ancient but new, because we've been dispossessed from the land, we've been separated from some of those natural traditions that we used to do. And so learning permaculture, which permaculture is essentially us working with nature and not against it. So, like, it's like a lot of the agriculture we see from Big A is a lot of Monsanto chemicalized, what they call concentrated animal feeding operations or CAFOs. So there was a video that was floating around where there was a hog farm in North Carolina, and they spray chemicals on the grass, and they use the hog manure to fertilize it. And when that water is when they wet it, it flows off into the water system, right? And it creates a smog or like a second atmosphere over you. And so permaculture is essentially using just natural ways to grow food, using it to work with nature. So implementing what they call the Three Sisters method or companion plant, bringing in bees and all of these different techniques. So in learning that, I took some of the, what I learned from my class, I took some of those principles and started designing differently. One, to maximize space, because we have a huge lot, but it's so much that I want to grow, not just by variety, but by pound as well. And so I wanted to utilize space, so I'm dealing with circles and different shapes and those type of things and growing in different shapes. Like you saw how I put the soil in a circle. And we're going to do some things like that in our show kitchen. So those are some of the things that I've done. And so, like, now I'm able to – I took my irrigation system, and now it's curving all around the place and stuff like that. But, like, that was something that trial and error I had to learn. The one time that the university did come out, Lincoln University came out, they showed me how to put the irrigation system together. But a lot of our urban – farmers don't know about irrigation. They were telling me that today they didn't know about irrigation. I was like, yeah, it keeps, first of all, it just goes straight to the root of the plant. It's drip irrigation. It's watering directly to the root of the plant. I've seen the drip tape down on the farm. I think I have, or maybe that was another something else I saw the last time. But that's what we use. Like I was just telling them, that's what we use. And I just wanted to do a class for them because urban agriculture is being given back to us through the lens of white people. And they're not giving us all of it because, one, they don't want us to have all of it, but, two, they also don't fully know all of it. And so I intentionally went to a permaculture class in Chicago because it was a Hispanic brother and a sister, because representation matters. Having someone that looked like you teach you this, it's just a totally different feeling than going under a white person who can't relate to your community. So everything that I'm learning, I'm teaching the farmers and the community that I'm working with that want to learn. And so I did record myself, and I'm going to edit the video, but I'm also, like, going to do a second class with a group of youth that's growing food. And so, like, irrigation, it's actually easy. It's really easy. I just showed them what needs to be done, where I get my irrigation system. I talked to them about collectively working together, instead of us always working so independently and by ourselves. Because my irrigation system was $300. It was for my family's land in Spanish Lake. And so I just had leftover tubing and leftover drip tape. So I brought it over to the modified instead of buying it over. But I was telling them, because it's so much left over, instead of people buying it independently, collectively go in and buy it. And, you know, hopefully they, since I'm sending so many people in, I'm going to talk to them about giving them a discount going in.
Ma'am, and
when you finish editing your film, how can we access learning that?
My organization has a my organization has a YouTube channel. I gotta add my co-director, what's the YouTube, but I'll be able to put it on YouTube, and I'll make an announcement of when we release it. But I gotta, it's gonna be two parts because I didn't have everything, and also because the irrigation is gonna be hooked up to a fire hydrant. It's not hooked up to a house. It's not just a vacant lot, and so we gotta use the hydrant.
I hear our music, Sister Tasha. Before we leave, would you please give your email address again? Please share that with us.
Yes, ma'am. So, Elevating Voices, STL@gmail.com. So that's ELEVATINGVOICESSTL@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, sister. Thank you. You've given us so much information, and I know we will be talking again, and I'm looking forward to learning more from you. Thank you so much. May Allah continue to bless you, your family, and all of the work you're doing, and all of those who are working with you. As-salamu alaykum, ma'am.
Wa alaykum salam.
Ishi, she went down to Holly Springs. Razadan and Baba, they went down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain. By brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me? Without the enlightenment of all my folks. Instead, cause I set myself on a quest for truth. And he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said what I am searching for are the